of the Stack Pack. That's right. Perhaps you can help solve a mystery. Go to unsolved.com. Let your boys know, too. That'd be cool. But, yeah, what's up, guys? We're back. We're still covering the Unsolved Mysteries reboot. Today we're talking about House of Terrors, episode 3 of the Netflix reboot of Unsolved Mysteries. I'm David Howell, joined, as always, by the lovely Daniel Benavidez.
Yeah, I think I'm changing my name to Home Dan now, permanently.
Home Dan until the entertainment industry gets back up and running.
I'm just going to start wearing fucking Adidas flip-flops with long tube socks and...
Why haven't you done that already?
And gym shorts and...
You're going to dress like Pete Davidson?
You mean that's Holmes Dan?
Holmes Dan. And then, of course, the delightful, as always, Elias Dominguez... Our very own Big Bad Vinyl Dad.
So you know what somebody told me recently on Friday? I called him and I was helping him over the phone do something. He's like, "You have a very soothing voice." I was like, "Has anybody ever told you that?" I was like, "No."
A man?
And I have a podcast too. Nobody's ever said that.
Also, and if anyone lives in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, if you listen to 88.2 The Breeze, you can find Eli. On Sunday nights from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m.
just playing America.
Yeah. It's just playing smooth, yacht rock.
Easy listening. Yeah. Exactly.
Yacht rock. and America and
your 3-hour.
What are some other bands?
Jefferson Starship.
Every now and then I'll throw in like an Always Sunny Charlie Day tune where he just plays piano.
Or like a Bob Seger.
Oh yeah, I'll do Bob Seger.
Or maybe like a slow Hall & Oates, nothing too exciting.
Yeah, nothing too exciting.
Yeah, either. Sorry. Okay, let's get to the case. Sorry guys. Yeah, we're here having fun. This is a
like that John Tesh hour that they used to have. Hey guys, I'm John Tesh.
So we're covering House of Terrors, which is the international entry into the new Unsolved Mysteries.
Hope you got your passports.
Yeah.
Ooh, I loved it. You know, people didn't like it because of the subtitles.
That's fucking idiotic.
That's the problem, is people can't get past subtitles.
Just read.
Just read.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll have to admit, it did take me way longer to take notes today, because usually when I'm taking notes, I'm listening to what's coming next. But like,
that's way different.
But this is coming from a guy who's watched and rewatched all 3 seasons of Dark in German, because the American subtitles are weird. And and also
not subtitles, overdubbed, right?
The overdub is weird. Yeah, that's what I meant. The subtitle. Yeah. I like reading the German English subtitles. I like to see German. Also, another good show is called Black Spot, which is a French show about like some creepy shit going on in the woods, and it's like kind
of French.
Twin Peaksy. Yeah, that's a great. But what's funny to me is they never trust Americans to like get shit. They're like, Black Spot is where like you don't get cell phone service, right?
Mm-hmm.
They call it a white zone up there. And when you see the title, it says Zona Blanche. And then at the bottom it says Black Spot. And I'm like, no, that says white zone.
That says white zone.
I know, I don't speak French, but I know enough to say that's completely different words.
Context clues say otherwise.
I appreciate them for dumbing it down for my dumbass Americanness, but
speaking of French, let's let everybody know. I think we've mentioned on the podcast a few times, but Dan and I used to take French together.
Oh yeah, you guys are so excited.
Years.
And I've been to France.
I have not been to France yet.
Didn't take a lick of French before.
I've been to France many, many a time.
Yeah, well,
Dan and I cannot speak French that well.
Yeah.
Oh man.
I'm gonna say a lot of names of French places and people today. And I've actually learned when my friend Benjamin, if I'll say something, he wants me to say something in French, that the more I just kind of mumble through it, but just kind of like just go through it as quick and like nonchalantly as possible, it's closer to what it sounds like.
I'm just going to say, how many of you guys have ordered poison at a cafe trying to order fish?
Oh, God. And I can ask how Dan's doing today.
Poisson?
Dan, ça va bien ou ça va mal?
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's good. Would you like to hear how I'm going to be pronouncing the person who we're going to be talking about all day today?
I would love to.
Xavier Dupont de Ligonnès.
Or we can call them Count Baguette.
Okay, yeah, I feel like that's a little offensive. Xavier DuPont.
That's not woke.
Xavier DuPont de Ligonnès. We would call him.
I want to be a count.
We would call him Xavier DuPont de Ligonnès.
I would. God, that's so American.
Yeah.
I thought I wanted to be a lord until I watched this episode, and I'm like, no, I want to be a count.
Yeah, I'm learning a lot of things that French people still take, like, nobility and, like, old families very seriously, but also that you can be a count and be, like, a saddled man who rents an apartment and is lonely.
All right.
Like Xavier's dad.
I just have flashbacks of me cheating off somebody in our class.
Yeah, you cheated off of me, which is funny because I cheated off of the girl that was sitting next.
I mean, it's amazing.
Which is odd because, you know, I had an 80 average and you had a 70 in that class. Yeah, so it makes sense. Telephone.
We passed.
Well, if you're, I don't know. I feel like, yeah, if you guys were just a couple of years younger, who knows? I mean, my little cousins moved to France and they already spoke English and Spanish. So they picked up French really quickly and now they're like in school and they're French school. They're learning German because they need to take a language they don't know.
What?
Yeah. So, I mean, shit. I mean, the American brain that we have.
In our school. They had They had French, and
Spanish,
French and Spanish.
Latin. Yeah.
They also had Latin.
They still had Latin when you were there. They didn't have Latin when I was there, and that was only like 4 years later, 3 or 4 years.
Our French teacher was actually pretty good. Good. It's just.
Oh, was it the old white lady or not old? No, but she was old to me then. She because I was young. Anyways, let's talk about. Come on, we don't need to talk. Okay. I feel like we talked about you guys having French class in high school like a lot of times in this podcast.
Yeah, we should probably cut that out.
This is an interesting tale that's been covered in French media and podcasts and documentaries and things. And we're getting the international treatment here in this Netflix Unsolved Mysteries episode. So this takes place in Nantes, France. Like the way she says it's like Nantes. I don't know.
Can we phone a Benjamin?
I don't know. Probably not. I think it's 10 p.m. there. So it's like the middle of, they're like 6 hours ahead. So it's like straight up the middle of the night or like early morning. Anyway, so west of France. Is where Nantes is located. It's a large city, but it's quiet, middle-class type, just a chill town. I mean, that's how all these crime stories start, right? Everything was normal. Middle-class people who went to church, they went to mass. And then we meet this lady who's walking down Schumann Boulevard in Nantes, and she goes to number 55 Schumann Boulevard, and this is where the bulk of our story takes place. The crime in question, Schumann Boulevard. The lady explains since 2011, it's been kind of people stop and pay respects and gawk at it because it's known as the House of Terror amongst the French community. And this is a pretty heavy story, guys, and it's got a lot of intrigue, and there's a lot of stuff that was apparently left out of this episode. So let's just dive in. Stelle Champon was the neighbor. She had a little shop in the neighborhood, and she did work for the family. She did work for the Ligonnès. She did altercations, and she ironed clothes. So she knew everybody. She pretty much explained the four kids and how it was a bustling household, and it was a big house, and the shutters were always open because there was always stuff going on. There's four kids. There's Count Xavier DuPont de Ligonnès, the dad, businessman, quote unquote, Agnes de Ligonnès, who was a Catholic school teacher, and her four kids. Arthur was the oldest. He was 20. He went to a private Catholic college. Thomas was 18. He was shy. He loved music. Anne was 16. She modeled in catalogs, and she was the best student of the bunch. And Benoit, the youngest, 13, played drums. That's what the lady had to say about him because she could just hear this little bitch playing drums all the time. Just kidding. And they're all sweet, like good-looking, sweet kids. And it's just a shame. Yeah, I could just imagine the Thomas Benoit band that never was. Oh, it's sad. It's a sad story. So I mean, of course. By all accounts, on the outside, on the surface, quite the happy, perfect family. April 11th, 2011, Stella notices that these shutters on the Legonnais house are closed. And that's very weird.
Super out of the ordinary. She says even when they went on vacation, they were open.
Yeah, yeah. And she, yeah. People are pretty open in France, you know. Like, especially in the way they explain this neighborhood that was kind of in the middle of Nantes is like just kind of like, you know, central and tight-knit. There was a note on their mailbox saying to stop leaving mail there. So Tuesday, when she goes back to work, she notices that still nothing's changed. Monday is kind of a day of rest. Like, no one actually works on Monday. It's pretty chill.
God.
Wednesday, she gets worried. That's when she's like, all right, something's up. These shutters are all closed. So she calls the police. April 13th, the police go to do like a normal welfare check. They call a locksmith and they say everything is pretty normal. The episode, okay, this is our first grain of salt. You know, this is stuff we found on the internet. We don't know if it's true. But the episode says that everything is pretty normal except for some sheets have been removed from the bed and duvets, of course, because they're French, and closets are open and something, you know, like closets were open kind of nonchalantly, but everything right. is normal.
And the visuals we have based on the episode was that everything looked normal except that I one thing that point that I noticed in the episode in the like reenact, I guess you can call them reenactments. I don't know if this is true or not, but the frames were still up, but they didn't have pictures.
Yeah. They mentioned that the pictures and the frames were gone, but other than that, everything
was weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because when you take a picture, you don't just take the picture. You take the frame with you. What?
Yeah. Yeah. Unless
like if you're moving,
unless you're trying to conserve space. So police seem to think that they left on their own accord, but this is, yeah, this is our first kind of grain of salt area because this Reddit thing says that, like a lot of things were taken care of and they could tell, and that the house was like empty, which is really weird. It says that the family's affairs were taken care of prior to the murder/disappearances.
Yeah. So the timeline gets really interesting. I've been reading the Wikipedia timeline. And so the family's final action. So these are the things that he did prior to the said and set, the said murders. Okay. The lease to the house had been terminated. All of the bank accounts for the family had been closed out. So they had no money in bank accounts. They had no credit cards.
They did not mention that at all.
Everything was closed out. They had a zero balance. All the schools, like the kids were going to private Catholic schools. All their schools had received all of their payment for the rest of the year's tuition.
Wait,
or what? Like last payment, right?
Yeah. Like, so the final settlement, like they were settled for the rest of the year. Like, you know, they were done. They were in the black. No one was going to
come. Okay. But wait, when was collecting. That payment? When was that payment given?
It just says before, it says family's these final action. So this is points. Prior to these incidents. And then also that's at the hard. Same time, Agnes, right? Is yeah. Agnes's employer was informed that she was suffering of gastritis.
Remind me, which one is Agnes?
The wife.
The mom.
The mother.
The yeah. Gastroenteritis? Gastroenteritis.
So basically infectious diarrhea.
Yeah. And she's moving to Australia also. She's got to quit her job because she's got bad diarrhea.
She's got the shits and she's like moving to
pick down one. Under. Pick one.
Yeah.
And then
okay.
And then weird. Also their neighbor notices the sign taped to their door that says, please return all correspondence to sender. Thank okay. you.
Merci. Merci.
So, okay. That is weird. The excuse for the wife was that she's moving to Australia.
Because she has the shits.
Okay. That we're going to put a pin in that because later the excuse he gives for where they are is way different.
Yeah. And it's also weird that they say this Reddit also some Reddit. I don't know how true it is. I don't think it's too true. Says the whole house was completely empty. And there's a cop on the fucking TV saying there wasn't enough to start an actual investigation. Based on just, you know, some sheets being gone.
Well, I was just thinking, like, now that you say this, like, because I just mentioned, like, the lease of the house had been terminated. So they didn't own the property. It was rented. could it be possible that, you know, the property that they were renting was furnished? So when they say completely emptied, they mean like emptied of personal effects.
Of their stuff.
Versus, you know, the furniture that comes with the house.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because they do say like nothing was out of place other than a few sheets missing and photos.
I'm going to write down some notes and we're going to talk about them at the end.
One car. So there's a bunch. They owned a bunch of cars. There's a lot of kids that, of that age. And only one car was missing, and it was a C5, which is a compact car.
A Citroen C5.
And no way six people and two dogs could have fit in there. And this is a point that Stell, the neighbor, brings up. And she said the cops looked at her like, oh, because the cops just assumed that they left on their own accord because of what the evidence they found at the house. So when she brought up that there's no way that all six of them and two dogs just fucking left in that little car.
Yeah, that's more two adults and one judge a good boy.
She literally says
– plus their stuff.
Yeah, and she literally says they said – they looked at me like, what are you smoking?
Right.
So let's talk about the April 14th letters that everybody got.
Oh, yeah.
So – a bunch of like acquaintances and friends and family got these letters from Xavier, pretty much saying that he got recruited by the DEA and he was moving to America to help with some like drug ring, and that nobody would see his family for a long time, and they wouldn't be able to contact him.
Didn't it also say like he was an exceptional man? Like,
no, that's just what everybody else says because the family's so noble.
So. Yeah, again, the wife gave her excuse that they're moving to Australia. The husband, or I'm saying the husband, but these letters that were given out were saying they're moving to
America.
But
what's funny, I feel like the Agnes thing was just an email, right? Like, she, like, resigned. Like, I don't think she's like, hey, I'm moving to Australia and I got bad shits. Like,
so when did they discover the bodies in March, right?
Still weird.
In April. It's all April.
In April? Well, it's because there's some interesting info for the April timeline. So Friday, April 1st, Arthur, the oldest child, leaves his college. And he doesn't turn up to the pizzeria where he works to collect his monthly wages. And that kind of throws off his boss because his boss was saying, like, he always shows up. Like, on the first of the month, he's always there.
That's weird.
Collecting his cash. Money. Yeah. And then also on that same day, Xavier buys cement, a shovel, and a hoe.
Same day of what? August 1st?
April 1st.
April,
yeah. April 1st, right, sorry.
And then on April 2nd, Xavier buys four bags of lime from various shops in the area.
This fucker murdered the fuck out of his family.
Yeah, that's weird.
All right, before we jump into a little more murder stuff, should we talk a little bit about Xavier's cool friend Bruno?
Oh yeah. Oh, he's so man. Cool. And handsome.
Yeah, for a guy who's like pushing 60.
Wow.
Is that how old he was? Damn.
Well, I mean, he said that he grew up with I'm just imagining he's the same age as Xavier or at least pretty in general vicinity. So, this guy's from Versailles and he met Xavier in the 70s when they were like 16 and they were best friends and neighbors, and they both came from noble families. The French, like we were saying, they take their nobility very seriously, and they were of a prestigious ilk. Xavier's father was actually a count as well. Obviously, he's a count. His dad's a count. They're counts. Someone in his family was a musketeer. There was Bruno also says something about – at one point, the family
was his name D'Artagnan.
The family was associated with a castle in the center of France. Like, that's so vague.
Oh, it was Chocula.
It sounds like a fairy tale. You know, a castle. They used to have a castle in the center of France. So nobility was very important to Xavier. So he meets Agnes in the 1980s. They fall in love, but he longed for adventure, and he actually dumped her ass. I dump your ass. Is what he said.
I do not accept you. Tabarnak.
But get out. I do not love you. I am going to travel. So he found himself. He wanted to find himself. So I guess he found himself. And by the time he gets back from finding himself, Agnes is knocked up. And he actually decides to marry her and adopt the kid, which is unheard of, especially because he gave the kid his famous Legonnais last name, which is, you know.
You're going to give this bastard child your name of Legonnais? How dare you?
How dare you? Yeah.
But I gave her the old de Legonnais.
Apparently that was unheard of, but he did it. And then they started their family. They had three more kids. He had two more sons and one daughter that were actually his. With all that said, the lady who's telling us the bulk of the story.
Well, hold on. I did want to mention before you go further that the friend did say that the note does seem like it was something he would say.
Yeah. Yeah, which is interesting. Because at first he says he doesn't believe he did it. And then by the end, he's like, how could he have done it? It's weird. Way that Bruno,
the progression of the story.
Yeah. With all that being said about how he's so noble and extraordinary and good family, whatever, this lady's explaining to like an 8-page letter saying this dude has secretly been in the DEA. They think, you know, she's like a reader. The first reaction a reader might have is maybe. And the way she says it is great. But, you know, because everybody takes their nobility seriously, like, oh, yeah, sure. That guy from that famous family? Yeah, he's a secret agent. Why not?
It's very patriarchy-driven. Yeah.
So April 15th, they return to the house. Nothing more. This is when they talk – in the episode, this is when they talk about the pictures missing from the frames. The her family apparently is like, what the fuck? A family doesn't just disappear. If you've seen the episode, it goes from April 18th to another visit that they find nothing. April 19th and then April 20th. And still they can't come up with anything new until April 21st. This is the day that under the terrace, under their porch, they called it a terrace, porch, whatever. Somebody finds a plastic bag. And in the reenactment, at least, it looks like the first thing that was found was a foot.
Which to me was amazing that the police went out so many times. If this crime happened in America, they would not have gone back. Those people, I don't feel like they would have been found for God, and not until somebody dug them up. I think would that.
I have no idea.
But the fact that the police actually went like six, they went like
well,
six
I mean,
visits.
It's because they were just trying to find any clue of where they might be.
But I feel like if it was America, they'd be like, nah, they're gone. Like we have the note. American police would be like, oh yeah, there's nothing else showing us. Why would we go back?
There's a
the
lot.
The note is ridiculous. The note is comical. Oh yeah, this guy who's like 50, he only got into firearms like last month. He doesn't have a criminal record.
He applied
record.
for the license in February.
I just felt like the French police. I just feel like the French police did a little bit more digging than.
Well, so there's a lot of intended. There's a lot of information that isn't discussed on the Netflix special. On April 3rd is the last official sighting of Agnes alive. A neighbor, sees Agnes for the last time shortly afterwards. She also sees Xavier putting large bags into his car. That same night, the couple and the three of their children are seen dining in a restaurant and also seen at a cinema. And then at 10:37, when they arrive back home, Xavier leaves a voicemail on his sister's answering machine that states, "We spent our Sunday evening in the cinema together and then in a restaurant. We just got back. I'm just calling to ask if it's too late to speak to you on the phone. And now I see it's gone to voicemail. But I was surprised you spoke to me about Bertram, who's getting ready for his flight. Huh. But I thought he only just arrived. So I was a bit surprised. Anyway, sending my love. If it's not too late to call me back or send me a text and I'll call you. Okay. I'm going to put the kids to bed. Say hi to everyone. See you soon. Maybe."
What day was that voicemail sent?
That was sent at 10:37 PM, April 3rd. It was made public in September of 2019.
So meanwhile, after they locate the bodies for the first time,
The DA is having a press conference about how they're looking for leads and they want people to come forward with information about what happened to this family because there's no sign of them. And in the middle of this press conference, I guess someone whispers into his ear and he just says, I have to stop this press conference. We'll resume it at a later time. Boom, just got to stop. And what he finds out is they found human bodies under the house. So he kind of needs to regroup and decide what the hell they're going to tell the press next. That's straight up something from a movie.
Right, because at this point they were just missing.
Yeah. So all the bodies were found wrapped up in sheets and duvets, and then they were wrapped in plastic and then tied. There was a religious icon next to each body, like he did some kind of poser religious burial.
I felt like that got a little bit creepy.
It's creepy, and it's also like it's a telling thing that he had respect for these people that he brutally murdered in their sleep. So in one area was Agnes, which is the mother, Arthur, who was 20, Benoit, 13, and Anne, who was 16, and the two black labs, and they were all buried in one grave together.
God, he even did the dogs in.
I know, what a piece of shit. And in a separate grave, they found Thomas. And, of course, Papa Xavier Dupont de Ligonnès is nowhere to be seen. And immediately an international warrant is put out for Xavier, and he becomes, of course, the prime suspect, obviously. And we've already talked about some of what he did that day leading up to it. So, yeah, I mean, lime and shovels and concrete, yeah. His attorney is a shady weirdo. He thinks because he was a nice guy and he had a bad back that it's literally impossible that he murdered his family.
That's just very comical. We should have had him on the podcast. He's way funnier than
I this. Know. His back is terrible. He's like, it's literally impossible is pretty much what he says. It's like, shut the fuck
up. But they say his oldest son, Thomas, the forensic says he died at a later date. So what if he killed the rest of the family and then made his
Thomas bury them?
That's fucked up. Fucked. No, that I don't think he would do that because
God, I hope not.
Yeah. Well,
if you're at gunpoint, I mean, just
it's
like
your son. What we know is he put them to sleep and murdered them in their sleep. I don't think he was trying to shield them from something. I don't think he would have done something so awful as to make him bury his own family. But I mean, it is he did murder them, but it's just like, I'm thinking of his perspective from what we know. I don't know.
That's pretty, it's fucked all around.
It's either way. I mean, it's not like one's better than the other. But
what if it wasn't necessarily the sense of like, you know, dig these holes because we're burying your mom and your siblings. But what if it was like, hey, like, I need you to dig this out. We're going to do something. I'm going to go check up at your mom. And when I come back, we'll take you to the hospital or, you know,
we're getting ahead of ourselves over here though.
But oh no, I don't think so. Because why wouldn't he,
we haven't even talked about why Thomas would be wanting to check up on his mom.
Does it say does it say how he put them to sleep?
With
a 22 long rifle round in the head.
That's terrible. It's forever sleep.
No, they all had sleeping pills in their system. And they were each shot twice in the head with a 22.
I wonder how he administered the sleeping pills.
Yeah, well. I don't know. Like Dan said, they were all eating out that night. But I guess it would be a little too obvious if he just like poisons everyone's drink.
Ice cream.
So all the kids, all the kids' sleeping pills. Agnes had no sleeping pills in her system. She did have a loud sleep apnea machine that helped her sleep. And it apparently went off at 3 a.m. They don't know why. And that's why the cops think that she was the first victim. And then, of course, all the kids are killed with two bullets to the head. Everybody's killed.
It's crazy how they're able to know that the sleep apnea machine was turned off at 3 a.m. That's so crazy.
Yeah, that's some technology. But, man.
Oh, dude. Okay, so I don't know if you want to talk about this now or later about the sheets. Like, because I know they bring it up later in the episode. Do you want to bring it up later?
I mean, there was no blood at all. Yeah. Like whatever he did, they were really well thought out. It's like, it's maybe like he put him to sleep like really hard, then wrapped him up in plastic and then shot him.
Yeah.
And there wouldn't be that much blood. I mean, there probably still would be. I don't know. I feel like I saw that in a horror movie. Wasn't that in like Red State where they wrap the kid's head in plastic and then they like shoot him in the head and then like all the gore is like kind of contained a little bit? I don't know if that's actually how that would work.
I don't know.
But it's a really fucked up scene. But yeah, I mean, that's what I was thinking of when I was like, how could there be no blood? Because that is truly one of the biggest mysteries is how is there five victims and actually six, seven, if you count the adorable little fur babies.
Unless he did like a Dexter. The
Judge of Good Boys.
Like, unless he did like a Dexter where he
kill roomed it,
fully wrapped the room.
Yeah, we don't know what the condition of the bodies were. You know, they don't go into that much. But I mean, that much detail about that. But I mean, it's just a weird, crazy mystery, mysterious detail that they couldn't for the life of them find any evidence that De Ligonnès himself, Xavier, actually did this. Like no evidence at all. It's not just there's no blood. There's no like nothing. And then when they start talking about why Thomas was killed at a different time, the reporter, the investigator lady says that maybe he hesitated killing Thomas because that would have been the last of his line, of his lineage. Thomas had to go back to school, and he actually let the kid go back to school, and apparently he didn't let the other kids go back to school. And on Tuesday, he called him back and said that his mom had been in a bicycle accident and that she was in a coma and might not wake up, and it was very serious and he had to get the fuck home. And apparently he went home. And as far as the Unsolved Mysteries episode says, the last they heard of him was at midnight when he texted a friend. His friend texted him back after midnight, but he never replied. So that's when they think the sleeping drugs took effect. But I think Dan learned something that's unconfirmable about how people saw Xavier and Thomas eating by themselves. In early April, just the two of them. And the waiter said that it was real awkward, like their body language and their vibes, right?
Yeah, so on Monday, April 4th, Xavier dines alone with his son Thomas at a restaurant called Le Croix Cadou, which is a high-end restaurant near Angers. The pair arrived at about 9 p.m., and Xavier ordered a 35-euro tasting menu with a half bottle of red wine.
Very specific.
Thomas had a sea bass dish with tomato juice. The total bill came out to 72 euros and 55 cents. The two waiters that served them remember Thomas feeling unwell near the end of the meal, and that Xavier and Thomas barely spoke at all during the entire ordeal.
Do you think he took him out and fucking gave him the sleep medicine, and that's why he was kind of feeling
last meal
weird?
It's not here in the Wikipedia, but there was an article that I found that was roughly translated thanks to Google Translate that was talking to one of the waiters, and he was talking about like every time any interaction between them, their body language was stiff. Like he was like, you know, he would come and like when he delivered the bill, their body language was very like on guard and very kind of staged.
Hey guys, we're all stuck inside. It's super hot anyway, so why not throw on this podcast? Introducing the Spook Troop's Summer of Scream. That's right, we're covering the Scream franchise over the next couple of months, and we just dropped the first episode where we cover, of course, the original 1998 Scream. So hang out with your boys, and we'll relive the 90s and the early 2000s fun horror comedy gems that is the Scream franchise. Check it out. Summer of Scream, Spook Troop. All right, now let's get into the little bit of info that the episode, the Unsolved Mysteries, gives us that Mr. Xavier Dupont de Ligonnès was not living the affluent life that he was. He wasn't actually as successful as he was portraying. Is a better way to say it.
Bad businessman.
Apparently, in the early 2000s, he really wanted to relocate his family to Florida, and it wasn't as easy as he thought. I guess he thought maybe because he had money, it would be easier to go to Florida. But
if he was only Russian.
But that's not. But that's not how it worked out. And apparently, they spent a lot of their money, most of their money, in fact.
Yeah, they said that their life savings they spent
trying to get to the USA. His friend Bruno explains that pretty much 2001 to 2011 was a slow downward spiral of him losing money and trying to start new businesses and, you know, portraying them as successful. But in truth, none of his businesses were very successful. And apparently he knew that this was a ticking time bomb and he knew his money was running out. He was aware that he might lose the house and that he might have the law to face, in fact, for, you know, creditors and things like that. I don't know.
Well, that's funny that you say that or that you bring that up, because on April 5th, a bailiff comes to the house and tries to collect a 20,000 euro debt that was owed, but no one answered.
So, yeah, he was definitely in some financial.
That's order. A lot of cash. 20,000 euros. That's like 25,000 US.
And he was proud, like, to be a rich nobleman. And I think he was way too proud. I think that's why this crime exists. He didn't want to lose his clout as a fancy rich man. I mean, at the end of the day, this case boils down to this sentence, which is, it seems like he would rather kill his kids than let them know that he was fucking broke.
It's like so fucked up. Like, I'd rather my family be dead. I'd rather my bloodline be ended instead of people knowing I'm broke.
That's some narcissistic behavior.
What kind of fucked up shit is that?
Instead of being like normal middle class, just working, you know.
You'll never know.
Sorry, we live in the Lexus neighborhood.
God.
And that line pretty much, that whole train of thought pretty much comes from Bruno, who's the guy at the beginning of the episode who says there's no way his friend did this. And by the end of the episode is singing like a canary if the canary was Lady Gaga.
Lady Gaga.
So,
rah. I'm just kidding.
You gotta update your Gaga fucking reference. That's like.
What's the latest
Gaga?
Okay, what's that?
She's got an iPhone commercial.
No, what's the fucking the one from The Star Is Born that everybody loves?
No, there's a new one. Hell,
are you happy in hell? Hell.
What about A Million Reasons? A Million Reasons is a good one. I highly recommend that. If you don't like Lady Gaga, check out A Million Reasons.
All right. So anyway,
give me a million reasons. Give me a million reasons.
Okay. So January 20th of 2011, 3 months before the murder, Xavier's father dies. And this was Count Grandpa. Hubert was his first name. Hubert de Ligonnès, I guess. So Count Grandpa died of a heart attack, and Xavier's charged with clearing out his stuff. And the neighbor, Hubert's neighbor, tells us that he was looking for a ring. He was looking for hidden money. He was looking for anything he could find. And at the end of the day, he didn't find anything. Except.
He was pretty disappointed that his dad didn't leave him anything. There was nothing left. He thought it was going to be his way out. But. As David said, there was some things that he did find.
Yeah.
That he put to good use.
One important.
Good use, quote unquote.
One thing that he did find, yeah. The old 22 long rifle that I guess, you know, we're all thinking it, that he probably most likely used to kill his family.
Yep. Do they mention like what the family was shot with?
Yeah, a 22 long rifle.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Yeah. I mean. This story is less about who did it, but fucking why and where is this motherfucker, you know?
Yeah.
It's like.
And I thought there was going to be a twist. I thought that they were going to find him somewhere like in a ditch.
Yeah.
I was like, well, who made him do this? But nope. We get a different ending.
The investigator lady tells us that Hubert was in fact very broke and that the last years of his life were quite sad. She mentions illness, loneliness, and poverty, but then she kind of like backtracks on the poverty and she's like, by poverty, I mean not a fucking count. Like anything was probably, it just, he was renting an apartment, which yeah. for a count would have been a low, I suppose.
Well, apparently wasn't Xavier, wasn't he, him and his family renting that house?
I think so. Well, I mean, I'm sure like they didn't live where he grew up and like where all the nope, they didn't live in Versailles anymore, you know? Yeah. So it seems like the family probably did, they probably
slumming
went down
it a little.
Yeah. Slumming it a little, even though they still lived in like, you know, a nice big house.
They went from the Bentley neighborhood to the Lexus neighborhood, which, you know, let's face it.
That's rough. It's a big downgrade. So now that Mr. De Ligonnès, is De Ligonnès the full ass name or is it Ligonnès?
I don't know.
Yeah. We might be fucking this up. Sorry to our people who actually know French. But anyway, so a month after he gets this gun from his dad, Xavier gets a firearm license, February 2nd, 2011. He even at one point takes his two sons to the shooting range with him and he asks the instructor at some point about a silencer, which would make it pretty easy to fucking kill people without people hearing in the middle of downtown Nantes.
Hey, David, how do you say silencer in French?
Silencia, 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 silencia. Sorry.
We had to rewind it a few times because both of us were like, well, because did you hear how she say it? Let's rewind it.
It was like in the span of like 2 minutes where one or two different people said silencio, you know, like silencer. And yeah. I don't know. I like that. I don't know. There's certain words that are like universal.
Those little we nuances. Like the accent.
Like, oh yeah. I'm obsessed with the sound of the French language. Like any song that's in French, like. We're listening to Spotify and a song came up that was Levy a straight up pop French pop hit and
it sounded great
and I just love it because of the sound of French. So he's asking the fucking instructor about a silencer. It's just so fucked up that the boys were there. March 12th, 2011, he buys a silencer, so this is like roughly a month prior to him killing his whole fam. So to put it into perspective, their last scene on April 4th. It's April 21st by the time they find the bodies, I believe, when Xavier becomes straight up suspect one. So there's 3 weeks where they just haven't been looking for him. And and he hasn't really been worried about being found. I guess you would know if the bodies were found right away, right? I don't know.
Right.
So cops are automatically, you know, searching hotels, restaurants near the area. And the next day, April 22nd, his car is found in Roquebrune-sur-Argin. I'm trying, guys. I know that I stayed in Neuville-sur-Saône. I know that my family lives in Neuville-sur-Saône, which is like on the river. I think that's what that means. I don't know what sur-Argin means, but this is where they found his car in. I'm going to try one more. Roquebrune-sur-Argin. But anyway, I tried. So this is a little timeline just to break things down for you guys. April 4th, he kills the family. April 5th, he kills Tomas. That whole week, he just stays at home by himself, apparently. Some friends and acquaintances see him around the hood that week by himself. A week after the murder, he leaves in his car and he gets snapped for speeding. He gets a little speeding picture taken when he's in between Nantes and La Rochelle, which is another French city. At noon, he's seen at a restaurant. Actually, he's not seen at a restaurant. He fucking swipes his credit card around that time at a restaurant.
He's just living his life.
Yeah, he's just continuing. He uses his credit card or debit card. He uses a card again at a hotel in La Rochelle, and then he heads south and southwest in France. He just doesn't seem to be hiding. I mean, I guess he must have been really confident in the job he did, you know. And his card is used in multiple locations. They even show an ATM photo, which is pretty insane to see a picture of this dude at an ATM days after he just brutally murdered and buried his family.
See, that's another thing that makes me question, like, the information, because, like, they say that he's seen using an ATM card, but yet the Reddit and the Wikipedia says that all his bank accounts were closed, so... What card was he using? How were they tracking him?
See, that's the thing that I don't know how to trust these internet sources.
I know. Yeah. That's what makes it so much more juicier is like...
What we're doing, you guys, is we're presenting the things that we have found. I feel like I'm being pretty clear of what is in the episode and what we are finding along the way. And we're sort of trying a new way of doing this, but I hope it's working out. Let us know. We kind of did it last week unintentionally with the 13 minutes of the Patrice Indres case. So police saw this, like, tracking his card. They saw it as a kind of farewell pilgrimage, if you will. And their thought was that these were the acts of somebody who was about to kill himself. For instance, La Rochelle is where he and Agnes lived when they were younger. Seemed to be pretty happy. He also stops in Toulouse, which is where some of the kids were born, apparently. And
great town.
And yeah, I've heard a lot of things about Toulouse. Is it on the beach or is it close? No? I don't think it's on the beach, right?
I don't think so.
So he heads a little bit more down south, to the south of France, some other places where he's just, you know, he was young and happy. And they think that he, you know, somebody says that he wanted to end things in a place where he was most happy. But as we know, the last stop was in Roquebrune-sur-Argent. That's where his car was left, at a Formula One hotel, which is interesting. They have Formula One hotels. He's seen on this. This is a creepy. I wish they had this video. I'm angry that they don't have this video. Why the fuck don't they have this video of him walking away from the hotel on the CCTV footage?
Because apparently he waves, right?
Apparently he waves, and he has some sort of rifle-shaped something.
So you're saying that his car was found at a Formula One hotel. That makes me kind of wonder, do you think the hotel beds there are shaped like Formula One race cars?
That's what I imagined. Like a Disney World? Like a little kid race car
bed? Yeah, can I stay in an Andretti race car bed?
When I was in...
Can I get the Dreddy room?
No, I want the one. I want the one from Cars.
Yeah, like a car bed.
The Mater. Do they have Mater?
That would be sick.
Sir,
is there Mater room?
Sir, when was the last time you had your tetanus shot? Last year. Okay, you can stay in Mater. Everything's rusted
out shit box.
So this fall, I was in Versailles with 4 kids.
And did you murder him?
And 3 adults. And I was like, oh, shit, am I sleeping in the car today? Like, because we're getting a hotel. I'm running out of money. And we stayed at this hotel. Benjamin got 2 rooms. And one of them was, like, a double bed and then a bunk bed on top and then a little single bed on top. So Benjamin and Sandra and Carlos and I stayed in one room. And then the grandpa and the girls and Samuel stayed in another room. Like, these rooms are, like, stacked on each other, like just enough space you need to like do the thing. And it was very clean. And, you know, the bed wasn't like insanely comfortable. It was like exactly what you need. It was like the bare comfortable minimums. And I when I told you, you were familiar with the hotel.
It was like Ibis or something like that.
Yeah. Ibis.
And I was like, oh yeah. Like where everything comes from IKEA.
I think you're right. And then the next day, Carlos was sending me pictures because they went on to Lyon. No, fuck. Where did they? They went on to fuck.
Oh, God. Tabernac.
They went on to where Benjamin's parents lived. I forget what city. And I was in Paris at a fucking hostel, and he sent me a picture from Ibis, and it could have been the same fucking room.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was cheap. And
they're everywhere. They're super cheap. They're super shitty.
People are so nice in France if you're just not in Paris.
I stayed at an Ibis in London, and the first day I stayed
You mean there. If you're American and you stay in Paris?
Honestly.
No, just anyone that's not a Parisian
Honestly, honestly, the things that this fucking president has done to like me just wanting to be an American in Europe is just, it's no fun.
So a little pro tip from Seasoned World Traveler, the bigger city you go to overseas, the shittier the people are to you. The smaller, I feel like
that's true here too.
It's true.
The smaller town you go universal. To, the nicer they are.
Yeah.
Because they haven't caught like on to how shitty you are. I feel like that's 100%
true here.
Yeah. I mean, I just feel like for instance, we're drinking at the cheapest Witherspoons in Birmingham, England. And some guy's just like, what? You're American? Hey, can I come and hang out with you guys? Yo, have a beer? We're like, sure. Here? He's like, if it was London, that wouldn't happen. But someone in Birmingham's like, what the fuck are you doing here, man? With a Burmese accent. Nice. That was not a Burmese accent.
We're getting pissed just like you.
Yeah. And we hung out from 3 p.m. to like 9 p.m. with this kid. He was a card-carrying member of the conservative English party. It was an interesting conversation.
A bus driver and a DJ.
Yeah. He was a bus driver. He was about to be a bus driver.
Oh, bus driver and train.
Yes, and a DJ.
And wow. Train. And
he was nice. We didn't agree on politics, but we had a lovely time. His
name was Dan. I got a great video of David passing out mid-sentence.
Dude, the beer was so cheap.
Yeah, and then I put a straw in his mouth, and Dan and I just chuckled. It was a Dan and Dan moment.
You're going to have to send me that. You're going to have to send me that video.
The beer was so cheap, and it was straight from the cask.
Fucking
and
£1.80.
If you haven't had a cask ale, I don't know. Actually, I've learned it's not for everybody because my brother was like, can I get a real fucking cold beer?
Yeah, what a bitch boy. Bitch boy.
Oh, I'm sorry that we're just talking about traveling because we've been fucking stuck forever.
Yeah.
We're not trying to be pretentious b-holes. He waves goodbye with his rifle-shaped bag and walks off into the backwoods of France. And basically, he went there to go kill himself.
Yeah, and I'm mad they don't show it too.
Dude, it's like they don't have it. I don't know. Like, somebody lost it. Like, why wouldn't they show it? It's so frustrating. If it exists and I haven't seen it, I want to know about it and I want to see it. I don't know. I feel that's all. But anyway, so of course they do an extensive search of the area. It's fucking 3 weeks later. I thought I'd point that out again. So these people are looking for any sort of clues, a fucking body, whatever they got, you know, something. And for 2 months, apparently they did a search of this area and found nothing. 98% of, how do you say this? Familicide, right? Familicide is when you murder your family, committed by the father. 98% of the time, this father kills himself. But this is that little 2%. And as the lady explains, what happens to those 2%? If he does escape into the woods, I mean, there's also a possibility that they just didn't find him, you know, he could have went up onto a mountain or under a rock or in a cave or who knows. There's so many things in just dense forest, the way they're explaining the backwoods. But some of the things he could have done is the ocean was 30 kilometers away. He could have hopped on a boat. He could have gotten on a cargo ship in Fos, which is near Marseille. He also could have just gotten on the highway to Italy. There's also mountain path roads to Italy, and he could have just got a cheap train ticket, paid in cash, and went to Croatia. And those are just the things that are on that's come up, that she's just thinking on the top of her head. Like, and I think at one point in the episode, she says something like, people that think that Xavier Dupont de Ligonnès is still in France are idiots. Like, if he's this smart, that's paraphrasing, by the way, but if he's this smart and this meticulous about, you know, the crime scene being completely like nothing ever happened, like to think that he would still be in France, which is a small country and in a very central area of the world where you could, 200, 200, 300 miles, you could hit up a number of countries. Xavier Dupont de Ligonnès was a pretty good English speaker and also pretty fluent in Spanish as well. The investigator, is that lady an investigator or is she a friend? I did miss her title at the beginning. The lady who tells most of the story.
Oh God.
Or did she might have wrote the book. I don't know. But him, anyway, but her and Bruno both think that he's most likely in Latin America somewhere. Argentina, Colombia, whatever. Another thing that one of the investigators points out is that he's such a normal looking dude. I would say more so in France, but at the same time, yeah, like he could fit into pretty much, because he doesn't look completely super, super duper. I'm a white guy, like freckles, blonde hair, but he doesn't look, he's not like really dark skinned or anything. Like he could just kind of just fit in the background.
I kind of blend in anywhere. Yeah, there's another picture of him where he has a mustache where he's like younger with one of his sons. And he looks like a different person. He could have grown a beard, changed his hair.
He did have pretty distinct, not great teeth, but I mean, that's easily fixed as well.
This podcast is sponsored by Invisalign.
And just for men. I don't know.
Get your 10% off by typing in straight teeth at Invisalign.com. I just felt like I had to lighten it up. I mean, we're talking about four dead kids and a dead mom.
Two dead Judge and a Good Dogs.
Judge Good Boys.
Two dead Judge a Good Boys.
I don't want to genderify the dogs. What are some other weird shits from the shit we found? Now's the time to get weird. Oh, did you read the thing about the Chicago? Did you read?
I didn't read it. I just saw there was like a CCTV footage of him getting money at an ATM that looks similar to him.
But the car in the background kind of looks European. I can't.
It does.
Like the license plate area looks very European, like thin and long.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
So this is what Terry Muir has told Variety. Somebody was actually in Chicago. I think they were on Lakeshore Drive and they heard this guy talking French and they looked at him and they had just seen the episode. They sent us a photo and it really did look like Xavier. It was striking. So we sent that tip on. But again, this is just a stranger. We don't have a name. We don't have anything specific. Mirror also says, in Xavier's case, what we're hoping for is that he's remarried, or he has a girlfriend, or he lives next door to somebody, or he has a coworker who absolutely 100% knows that that is him. We need a very specific lead because those leads come in from all over the world. Xavier looks like so many other people. And he goes on to say, with Netflix's global reach, if Xavier is going to be found, we're really hoping that the Netflix audience will find him if he's alive. That's the mystery. Did he kill himself after he went through the elaborate work that he did? Or is he out there somewhere? So we're hoping he's catchable. Mir says also that there's someone constantly working on the website going through leads. And it was a living, breathing television series where it has life of its own.
So apparently that CCTV picture wasn't actually from Chicago. It was a man. It was actually him when he was last seen in Glasgow.
He was in Glasgow?
Apparently.
They have proof that he was actually in Glasgow? That's interesting.
That's what it says.
There's so many weird things. You already talked about the pizza, how the son worked at a pizza place.
Yeah, yeah. And like he was known for like showing up very promptly to collect his wages. And I would too if I was a 20-year-old.
It seems – it's creepy, but it seems like the way that some of these like – the way that so much of this stuff was taken care of, quote unquote, like their financial things and this and that. It seems like they were – I don't know, like held hostage. Like, don't you feel in your head that they kind of knew that they were going to die maybe or something?
Or something fucked up was about to happen.
Like, it's just so weird. I mean, I get it. I don't think if you're 13-year-old Benoit, you would know that your parents like, put in the last your, they did your last payment for school. Like, you know. But it's also, it just seems,
it seems he would spend the money for that.
Yeah. It seems oddly responsible that he would just, you know, cross all these T's and dot all these I's, if you will. You know?
Yeah, maybe.
Just to, like, go on the lam forever.
Yeah.
It almost seems like he didn't want to, I don't know. It just seems like a sins of our, he didn't want anybody to know that he was a financial failure. He didn't want his kids to know. He didn't want them to have any life that wasn't the perfect life they'd already been leading. And then he even goes so far as to, pay off all of the debts and just square off as many things as he can with as many people before he does this awful thing. I don't know, man. Deep down in my soul, I feel like he's a skeleton somewhere.
I don't know.
What do you guys think?
So I got a little bit more information.
Yeah. Tell me something Glasgow, more
about that Glasgow, sighting that I just mentioned. So apparently police thought that they saw him boarding an EasyJet flight in Glasgow, but apparently they weren't able to apprehend him in time. So what they did was they knew the flight was going to Scotland. So they called the Scottish cops and they asked them to meet him on the other side. So anyways, they got him. Initially the prints were a partial match, but then they actually did DNA and saw that he was not the same guy. So they let him go.
Wow. Okay. So he was never in Glasgow.
Nope.
I honestly think he's long gone. I know that makes it so much less interesting. I mean,
oh yeah, but it could, but I mean, where's his body though? That's what the thing is, like, where, if you're going to commit suicide or something, where's your body?
Wasn't there a case that we covered where somebody just walked into the fucking desert and they didn't find his body for years, like until like last year or something?
Yeah.
Or maybe not last year.
In San Diego. I think it was like San Diego or Las Vegas. Some dude went on like a peyote journey and just never came back.
That sounds like fun.
It was something like.
Yeah, if only, right?
It was something. Yeah. It was something like they did a huge search and then they couldn't find him and then they found his body way later, like years and years later. But I don't know. We do cover a lot of cases. I couldn't point you into the direction of where to listen to that. We're not the most together podcast, but whatever.
At least when it comes to this.
See episode. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm not like Stanley. Like we mentioned something.
I wonder how they know all that.
See episode this to go to that. Yeah.
That's amazing.
I don't know if you guys are familiar with the John List story. Do you know the John List story? You know who John List is?
The name sounds familiar.
No.
So we also found a Google Drive. Where did we find that Google Drive? It's got a lot of extras.
Dan found it.
It has extras, a little bit of extras, and just some specific like key points in each case.
We should post that link. It's a it's a Reddit forum that was started by the actual producers of the Netflix reboot of Unsolved Mysteries.
Put the link on our Instagram.
So there's a couple of things that aren't in the episodes, but mostly it's just like key points of things. So I'm going to read this is the lady that we get to know in the episode talking about. I would play the audio, but it's not going to help because it's in French, but she talks about the similarities between this and the John List story. So I'm just going to read it while she says it. Let's see how this goes. In the United States, there's a much cited case that resembles the Ligonnès case. It's in a fascinating and disturbing way. It's the John List case. Sorry, I'll edit this. John List was an insurance agent who disappeared in 1971. In the family house that was similarly fashioned to the bourgeois house that these guys lived in, they found the mother dead on the first floor in her room. They found his wife dead in the kitchen. This is his mother-in-law. She was killed while she was having breakfast. And also there was three children. They found that, just as with Xavier Ligonnès, the crimes that happened at two different times. The majority of the family was killed one day, and the mother and the wife in the morning, and the two kids when they came home from school. And in the evening, he went to watch a soccer game with his eldest son. Then after the game, they came home, and he killed him. And he was missing for a while. Sorry, this is just me. And also, there's a similar chilling postponement, is what she says. There's also a similarity of all the preparation after the crime. John List called his children's school to say that they would not be able to come. It's really eerie. Like, he looked up if somebody had done this before. He paused milk deliveries, 1971 USA. He canceled the newspaper and magazine subscriptions. Really weird, right? And they found his car in the parking lot of JFK Airport.
Where did he go?
Because they found his car there, they thought that he had flown far, far away.
But that wasn't the case.
They're madly similar, as we say, is the end of that. In 1989, when young Xavier was doing his road trip across America to the United States, he apparently read about John List. The story of John List came out, is what she says. They found List because of a TV show, and on the show they used age-enhancing software to age John List's face.
Wow, that actually worked?
Yeah, they found him. So as
Face app.
Yeah, face app.
So John List had been on the run for 18 years. There was a woman who saw it and said, "That's my neighbor," and it was her neighbor. Didn't we cover – didn't cover John List, right? He's not on Unsolved Mysteries. It was the perfect escape for 18 years, but it came to an end. Yep. I think it's a meaningful story to all those who hope Xavier Dupont de Ligonnès will be caught, is what she ends with. It is pretty similar. John List was on the run for 18 years.
That's insane.
So doing a little more research on this, John List was actually caught with the help of America's Most Wanted. So, yeah, after 18 years on the run, you can still be caught. And for Homeboy, it's only been 9, so who knows? But I don't know, man. My gut says that he's gone. Didn't you – I don't think you mentioned that there was like some – blog posts or something that you read that he was saying that he'd rather be dead or something. He'd rather be dead than poor. Or I don't know.
So one of his things is he was a active member in a Christian Catholic blog. And one of the articles he wrote was, "It's better to be dead than to live your life in a sham." Mm. And he posted
that's
that
pretty telling.
Right around the same time that his family died.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. Yeah. These, like we said, what we've been saying every episode for the past couple. Yeah. If you fucking unsolved.com, shit, you know, do it.
If you know somebody that looks like them.
Yeah.
Definitely call in and say something.
This guy, like his reasoning to me is insane, but it all points to that. Like, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
It all points to that. Him like taking his nobility and his family lineage. And I guess all of France was too, that he just fucking killed this beautiful family. And yeah. So hopefully, I don't know, man. Like I've been saying, hopefully we get some new fucking, we get some more information.
Updates. I keep checking for updates. Dude, all
I
the
can't
time.
Wait for updates. It's going to be sick.
If we get some big updates, oh, it's going to be so exciting.
Oh, man. Especially some of these. I feel like they're so solvable.
Yeah. Yeah. They are very solvable. Especially, oh, man, the last one is frustratingly solvable.
Oh, dude, the last one is so frustrating.
Yeah. But we'll get to it. Thanks so much, guys, for listening. We know that we have a lot of new listeners and because of the new Unsolved Mysteries. And it's awesome. And thanks so much for hanging out with us and joining up. You can donate money at anchor.fm. You can be like a, you know, you can contribute every month. Or you can just donate a one-time fee. You can also leave us a message. Leave us a message. We don't get messages. If we got a message, we would play it probably. You should do it. We've been getting a lot of cool feedback on Instagram these past couple weeks.
Yeah, even on our Facebook, we've been getting some little bit of action over there, which we never used to get. So
yeah. Thanks for that. It's fun. It's fun talking about. I just kind of asked, did Rob do it for Patrice Indris, the husband? And, oh, man, people, yeah, it's interesting. Most of the people say he did it, but like me, a couple of them are like, I don't think he actually killed her, but you know, he is fucking weird, and I cannot deny that. So it's a fun, it's been a fun ongoing conversation. But yeah, so that's the House of Terror, where all this terror happened, and we don't know how, and how it was so clean, and there's just so many mysteries in the middle. And we still, to this day, 9 years and counting, have no idea what happened to Xavier Dupont de Ligonnès. And that's the last time I'm saying it tonight. I might have said Xavier a couple times, but yeah. Anyway, thanks for hanging out. We will be back as soon as we can with Zoe's story, right? Alonzo. This is a heartbreaking story, the next one. But yeah, we'll be here for it. We'll cover it. It's kind of timely with all the Black Lives Matter stuff going on, how hard that case hits at this time in America's history. So yeah, hang out with us and we'll talk about that. For every mystery, there's someone somewhere who knows the truth. And perhaps that someone is listening. And perhaps that someone is you. Unsolved.com.